Next case is 03-1161, State of Ohio versus Stephen Price.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. We're here today to decide on the state's appeal how an appellate court should review the admissibility of evidence. Specifically, this issue relates to the standard of review for admissibility of evidence with respect to other act evidence pursuant to Evidence Rule 404B and Revised Code 2945.59. It's the state avers that the appellate court improperly used a de novo approach and didn't really use the abuse of discretion review that's the law with respect to admissibility of evidence. That this was evident in the court's language that, quote, the trial court never has the discretion to make an error of law. So the Court of Appeals used this error of law analysis to look at all this evidence and totally skipped, really, an abuse of discretion analysis. As we know, the abuse of discretion.
Let me interrupt you, Mr. President.
Sure.
You know, I didn't vote to allow this case. I didn't see an issue here that upon which we need to write principle of law. What's the new law here for us to write on? What law is not clear? It looks to me like it's abuse of discretion or error at the most.
I think that the language is dangerous in the appellate decision that court has no discretion to make an error of law, that there was no analysis with respect to abuse of discretion. There was no analysis that how the court made its decision, looking at all the other evidence the court excluded and how it carefully limited the state with respect to the other act evidence that was admitted. And in fact, the appellate court basically took what it thought the other act evidence was, and used a bit of a manifest weight review technique to decide that it was prejudicial to this defendant. I believe that if the court had properly used the abuse of discretion and in conjunction with that, whether it materially prejudiced this defendant properly, that it would find that the court was very careful in how it limited the evidence in this case, and that any other evidence, especially some of the evidence listed by the Court of Appeals, was brought in with by defense counsel or did not really materially prejudice in view of the other substantial evidence of his guilt in this case. Specifically, the court uses it cites six facts. The fact that the victim testified that he saw pictures of naked boys and nude people on a defendant's computer. This is clear that this is first brought out on a redirect question after the cross-examination asked him about using the defendant's computer. The state would argue that this evidence tends to show that this defendant is sexually gratified by young boys, which is an element of these offenses, gross sexual imposition, but especially with respect to kidnapping. I think it should be noted that the state has to prove the kidnapping elements as much as the gross sexual imposition elements, because the jury could easily find that gross sexual imposition was not met beyond a reasonable doubt, but the kidnapping for purpose of engaging in sexual activity was proved beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's an important distinction, that the jury could have found that this defendant committed the kidnapping with this purpose, whether or not that purpose was fulfilled. And I believe that when you look at how the court, especially the motion in limine, that the state had boxes of other act evidence, from sexual toys displayed on his mantle to pornographic movies to actual testimony of other children seeing him walk around his house naked, touching other boys, commenting that these boys are too young to molest. These types of other act evidence, which I think would have gone to that same intent, motivation, argument that the state makes. The court was very careful and limited all of that evidence and basically limited us to two photographs, and two photographs that were fairly innocent compared to the other act evidence that the state was trying to admit. And when you look at that, and even if this court did find that that was arbitrary, unconscionable, or unreasonable in some way, that it really wasn't materially prejudicial in view of substantial other evidence of his guilt. It's important also that the court keep in mind that these crimes against children are really crimes of access, that this is an abuse of trust, that an adult has this position of trust over a child. And in this case, the state wanted to show the jury all the things that this defendant did to ingratiate himself into these young boys' lives and to expose them to his sexuality. It starts off innocently enough with various activities for very vulnerable boys from difficult, troubled home life to his physical contact with them, and which allows him this acclimation and access to abuse them. And I think that's important because that also goes to a proper use of the other act evidence as to the defendant's plan or scheme, which is all part and parcel of how he's able to molest the boys. Finally, Your Honors, I'd like to reserve some time in rebuttal, but I would also like to point out that the danger of this sort of de novo review that the appellate court used is really that any evidence that there's a colorable argument that there is some kind of error of law sort of opens a Pandora's box for that court of appeals to really use the evidence there and advocate for the defendant in the case, and without going through the proper steps of whether it was admitted, arbitrarily, unreasonably, or unconscionably, that it's too easy of a step to miss. And of course, because error in admission of evidence is harmless if there is no reasonable possibility that exclusion of the evidence would have affected the result of the trial, which is what the state's argument is in this case.
Counselor, there's really no new rule of law to write here. Your argument is based solely on error correction on the appellate 8th District.
That's correct, the way that they analyze the admissibility of the evidence.
So, is your argument that we should deal with this case and correct the error so that the 8th District doesn't continue to rely on this analysis and this process and use this in both, under inferior courts as well as the 8th District? Because beyond that, I can see no reason for this case to be here.
I agree that. I think that this court needs to instruct the appellate court directly that the evidence that it reviewed, they used an improper standard, that the way they analyzed all this evidence was improper, that this evidence was admissible under 404B for the purposes of showing intent, motivation, or the plan or scheme of this defendant to commit, especially the kidnapping count, which had a sexual motivation specification and a specific element that he did this with the intent to engage in sexual activity.
Mr. Corrigan, you're really looking for a rule of law that says when the evidence is offered and goes to a substantial element, Court of Appeals shouldn't misconstrue it as other acts and do something different with it. Isn't that the rule of law you're asking us to get out of this case?
Yes, that's correct, Judge. If there's no other questions, I reviewed reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Corrigan.
Thank you.
Mr. Mancino.
May it please the court. The facts in this case were pretty straightforward as whether the defendant on a particular day had unlawful sexual contact with this person, Justin Brewer. There was no other fact. According to Justin Brewer's recitation, he woke up in the morning and allegedly Mr. Kratz was on top of him, and they were both naked, and they were rubbing their penises together at that particular time. That was the issue the jury had to decide.
Is there a principle of law for it? We know the facts. Is there a principle of law for us to write in this case, Mr. Mancino, do you think?
I don't believe there's any, because the
what about the one suggested by Justice O'Donnell? Sounds like a pretty good principle of law.
Well, I think you have to start off, number one, is what was offered about this lifestyle. This propensity evidence is initially inadmissible. It has nothing to do whether he was guilty of the offense, committed the offense, whether it had any proper purpose. So it's inadmissible in and of itself, and I think the burden is on the state to show why is this admissible. And they could advance no other reason other than to show that this Stephen Kratz was a homosexual or lived a gay lifestyle, which is very inflammatory in front of a jury. And it came down to, did you believe Stephen Kratz when he said nothing happened, there was no unlawful sexual contact, or did you believe the child? But when you factor in this homosexual lifestyle, what generally sexually gratifies the defendant in his lifestyle, well, you have a jury being misled and obviously going to convict on improper character evidence and propensity evidence. The Court of Appeals very carefully identified six items that they said were improperly admitted. And there's no reason to say that the Court of Appeals lost its way or didn't properly consider it. The Court of Appeals is in the best position. They hear a lot of these cases. They're in the best position to determine whether this evidence should be admitted. And if it's improperly admitted, what is the likely prejudicial effect of offering this particular evidence? I do not see any real important proposition of law. This is just another case, which you see in Cahoga County, a lot of prosecutorial overkill, where they want to induce everything under the sun in order to secure a conviction in this case. And what I would also, and I just found it over the weekend, is that the Montgomery County Court of Appeals in the last couple of weeks almost had an identical case where this type of evidence involving a defendant who was gay or homosexual offered this thing about his lifestyle and that he had pictures of males on his computer in his home, and they found that to be improper. So, I mean, as I stated, I do not believe there's any overriding issue or proposition of law that can be developed in this case. The Court of Appeals
Counselor, would you have excluded all evidence as to your client's homosexuality and lifestyle?
Yes, I would. I mean, it had nothing to do with it. It's just
the state to prove that the individual was gratified through homosexual activities then?
Well, it's very simple in this case. If they believed the victim, or Justin Brewer, that he was on top of him naked in bed when he got up in the morning and that they were rubbing their penis together, I don't know what else you would need to say that that was not for sexual gratification. You would need nothing further. And you're only talking about a very discreet act on one day, one evening, and the following morning. So it's not a case where further happened in the case. So, I mean, a jury can easily determine was that for the purpose of sexual gratification. They don't need all of this extraneous evidence, and certainly that would skew their view of the evidence or objectivity as to whether the contact was for the purpose of sexual gratification or either, which needs to be proven in this case. So I don't, it's really not needed in this case. It's an overkill, and certainly it's, this propensity and character type evidence is not needed. And the jury could easily decide it based on proper instructions from the court. If this court has any questions, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mancino. Mr. Corrigan, you saved a little over 6 minutes of your time.
Thank you. I would just like to reiterate that Mr. Mancino has omitted the other count in this crime, which was kidnapping. And a kidnapping is not an overtly sexual crime, except when it's charged in this way, where we have to prove that his purpose for removing the child from that couch up to his room, which is a very innocent, taken in and of itself, act, that it was done for the purpose to engage in sexual activity. And part of the definition of sexual activity is that the victim or the defendant was sexually gratified for his motivation and his purpose. And that is a separate count, a separate animus that could be found by this jury without a finding of guilt for the gross sexual imposition, especially in this case, in these facts, where there was a large time gap between when the child was removed from the couch until when the sexual activity actually occurred. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.